Hey everyone, welcome back to The Growth Signal, where we are rethinking customer relationships, how we get them, how we keep them, and how we lead in the ever-evolving expectations that our customers have for us. And today I'm so excited to welcome you to the show. Welcome to the show, Emily.
Thanks for having me.
So let's dive right in, Emily. What is your hot take?
So I actually think we, as kind of a collective customer success group, are asking our customers too much about their desired outcomes.
Tell me more about that. What do you mean by like asking too much? Because Emily, my job is to be strategic. And if I don't know their desired outcomes, then how can I possibly be strategic? So tell me more about what you mean by that.
So, and I'll say it differs a little bit depending on the stage of your company. So if you're like pre or early product market fit, maybe you do need to ask a little bit more there. But once you really start to have a handful of customers, you start to understand what use cases really work, where people can see value. I think it's actually the job of the CSM to direct and guide that rather than kind of ask your customers. So I started kind of changing the way that I do this about 2 or 3 years ago, because prior to that, you know, trying to be the best CSM and you go and you're like, customer, tell me, what are your desired outcomes? What are you trying to get out of this? What KPIs are you going to be measuring? And 95% of the time, people give you like a blank stare. Like they don't know, right? They know that the current state is not great and they want to get to a better state. But very, very few customers ahead of kind of the buying cycle and actually using something have done this full analysis of, here are all my baselines. Here are the KPIs I'm going to be measuring. Here's the next milestone that I want to hit, right? Like that's how we think in CS world, but it's not actually how customers buy and how customers think as they're onboarding into a tool. So I think really from a CS standpoint, what we need to do is say less of a choice, right? Like, all right, here are the 2 or 3 things we know we can impact given the type of company you are, the friction points that we heard during the sales cycle. And then really get that confirmation, right? You don't want to go in the fully wrong direction. But rather than kind of giving them this like Pandora's box of what do you want, being a little bit more prescriptive so that number one, you know, they're not kind of overwhelmed and trying to now create these metrics that maybe they weren't specifically thinking about before. And then number two, you can actually ensure that they're metrics that you can measure and that you can impact with your product.
Yeah, I had a parallel story, right? I won't call it exactly the same, but I typically work more in like the consulting and the research side of the house. And so what happened to me was we had a customer, we sold them a project. They ended up having their decision maker leave and move on, but the project was still kind of on, but it now had a new kind of scope. So we adjusted the scope and then we had a researcher get in there. Well, then we had researcher turnover. And then all of a sudden this one customer had basically spent like 2 or 3 weeks, 2 or 3 meetings worth of time restating what he was trying to accomplish. And then by the time we got to the third person where, you know, it was a brand new employee, the person who was handling it was out sick, had asked kind of those good questions of like, okay, what are you looking to achieve? What are you looking to learn? And he kind of blew up on her. He was like, hey, this is your job to understand. It's not my fault that your team is not communicating internally. It's not my fault that, you know, you aren't aware of the scope. And she was like, so upset. Wasn't really her fault. She got into a situation, but it was a good lesson for us as a team of like, it is not the customer's job to carry the water of what good looks like. It is our job to carry the water of what good looks like and what they're trying to achieve. And especially if they've already answered that question more than once. To your point, we're a young startup. So we're all basically still learning and trying to grow up, if you will. Mm-hmm. But as you get older, odds are good you have seen exactly what they need to do in order to find the most value of your product. And you know your product better than they do. So I really like the idea of making sure that you are driving forward what that success looks like and not asking the customer to invent it for you, because they're probably not going to really know how to even start that conversation.
Yeah, absolutely.
So what do you think, you know, what do you think leaders are getting wrong when it comes to customer relationships? What are they missing?
I think that, and this is a little bit tale as old as time, so nothing completely new here, but I think that documentation and context piece is still really hard. So I personally have had a lot of change on my team over the last 2 years. And you can see that, you know, despite our best running Google Notes or things in a CSP or Gong recordings, there is still just something to be said about longevity with a customer and that like level of understanding. And I feel like you can do a bunch of even like AI generated summaries, but that context is still really, really hard for someone to ramp up on quickly. You know, you can kind of do the small pieces to start to gain customer trust. But I think overall, like it's still really hard when you have team turnover to not have kind of a blip in performance, right? Or a bit of a restart, no matter how well things seem to be documented.
And you can do all the documentation in the world, but there are some of those things that are just small little things that you start to learn about a customer. For example, I had a call yesterday and I know this customer prefers to meet in Microsoft Teams. Not my favorite, not my company's favorite. We almost never use it, but I know that she prefers Microsoft Teams and she wants to collaborate and she wants to be very hands-on, right? She wants to be in the weeds with you. But I know that because I know her. And nowhere is that in any notes. It's not in any CSP. It's not in any CRM. I just know that about her because I've worked with her for several years. And that's the things that you start to learn as you build these relationships with your customers that aren't necessarily intuitive to pass on. It would never occur to me to put in our company notes, prefers Microsoft Teams, wants to be very hands-on and collaborative. So if we're not documenting well, or the systems that we're using to document right now aren't serving us, what would you recommend we do? What is the one thing you would have leaders start doing to start solving this problem?
It's a good question. I think still something that we're working through. I think it's figuring out what are those key things that you need to know. You know, one of the kind of activities that we're doing now is around the sales handoff. Sales handoff process, very broken.
That's almost a dirty word with most people that I talk to in post-sales. They're like, it never works. It's always terrible. And it's always sales' fault, I think, too, is what I'm hearing from people.
Well, when you think about it, like from the sales point of view, you're excited, right? You just won this deal. You don't want to have to go write down and document a bunch of stuff.
It's also kind of not your personality. If I think about the stereotypical seller, like, I wouldn't call them lovers of data entry.
Fair. Very fair. And if you think about it, if you have a long sales cycle, when you got that piece of information, could have been 3-6 months ago.
Right.
And then from a post-sale side, right, you always want more information than what the seller is going to give you. Like, don't give me one sentence. You talked to them for 6 months. Like, give me 3 pages of stuff. And that's never going to happen either. Right. And so I think as, you know, back to your question on like, how do we get better? It's being really focused on what information matters. And so what we did in kind of a iteration one, specifically on sales handoff, is, okay, what do we need to really be successful? Maybe we don't get all of the nuanced pieces. It's going to be hard, again, to kind of get every piece of information. But what are those, say, 15 or 20 things that we absolutely need to know to set the customer up for success, to make sure we're not re-asking key things? And, you know, V1 was great. Just build those 20 questions into our CRM. Again, how successful? Still a lot of data entry. So really where we need to go now is then how do we leverage technology to do that, right? If we have all of the recordings throughout the sales cycle, we know the specific things that we need to look for. How do we then really, the challenge now is, do you actually know the things that you need to know? Do you have the right questions to ask so that you can look through all of the data, look through all of the conversations to actually get you that context? Because I think most companies don't have a data quantity problem. It's like a data sorting problem. And so really the people who are going to do it successfully are the ones who know kind of what data and insights they need out of what has already been recorded.
Yeah, I think that, so I work with researchers, right? So we live in mounds and mounds of data and piles of data. And I think one of the things we always look for in our researchers is the ability to curate. And I think being able to curate information, whether that's unstructured notes from your conversation with your clients or actual hard data that's coming in, that ability to curate, it's one, really hard to do because it requires a level of understanding and nuance, but two, can be the real game changer between having data and information and stuff that's useful and having just a bunch of noise that's distracting, right? Mm-hmm. And when you get into that distracting mode, you are never going to be successful because people won't, I don't have the attention span for that. I'm not going to sift through 100 pages of notes. And I live on the sales side, right? So you're going to get my kind of quick and dirty gut feel of how I feel about them and what I think is going on, but you're probably not going to get the mini series on Netflix that you're looking for. You're not going to get the full download.
Yeah, I think that's a good summary.
So if we know that we need to be more prescriptive for our customers, but we also know that the handoff is maybe not a perfect process, right? Or even remotely optimized for what we're looking for. How do we navigate these conversations without making the customers do our dirty work, our busy work here?
Yeah. So one of the things that we did is started to try and do that legwork internally. So again, rather than going to the customer and saying, yeah, what do you care about? We actually went back and looked across our customers and said, what are the charts that we're most commonly asked for? What metrics resonate when we do business reviews? When we ask the question, what do you present to your leadership or board? What things are we hearing back, right? Like that's what customers care about. And so we have this information. So we started to consolidate that. And then rather than going to customers and saying, you know, what metrics, what KPIs, we would actually bring them a sheet of paper and say, here are the common things that we hear. Mm-hmm. Maybe not all are applicable to your business because we have, you know, a wide group that we're supporting. But there's going to be two or three in here that resonate with you. And by giving them kind of like that structured choice, I'm a big fan of still giving people options. So, you know, you never want to say this is your only thing and go with it because then people feel a little bit trapped. But if you give them few options and they're like very prescriptive, then people still feel like they have the power, but also don't feel overwhelmed. So we've had a lot of success in kind of limiting that group, knowing, again, these are things we know we can impact, we know we can measure, and we've seen success before. So we have a really good feeling that we can kind of move customers along that customer journey and impact those things.
It's almost like to bring it to a business to consumer kind of environment, when you're on Amazon and you buy something and it's like customers like you also bought, right? That's very mm-hmm. effective because they know from my profile and my experience the kinds of things that I'm probably interested in. And you know from your experience with your customers, the things that they're probably interested. Are you asking them to buy, you know, a pair of socks after you just bought a pair of shoes? No. But you have learned that these things tend to have more impact. Have you seen when you're working with, more mid-level people that are trying to level up, have you seen a certain type of metric or connection to the business that seems to be more generally effective regardless of their role or your product type?
And you're saying mid people, like at the customer?
Yeah, whoever you're working with. A lot of times, I guess I'm generalizing here. A lot of times I find that you're working with not necessarily the end decision maker, not the person who purchased your product, but the people who actually have to use it. So when you're working with those people and you have to help them prove value to prepare for a hopeful renewal someday, is there like one metric that you found that really just seems to hit the mark every time?
Oh, it's a good question. I think at least in the space in which we're operating in, there's kind of two key areas depending on which team we're working in. One is around efficiency and one is around dollar savings. So those seem to be pretty common threads across both. Going back to my early sales training, right? I kind of had it drilled into me that you're impacting one of these many things, right? It's productivity and efficiency. It's the company's image. It's revenue, expenses, safety, security, stability. Brian, you should be proud of me if you're listening.
We'll make sure he gets a copy of this episode.
Yeah, exactly. But really the idea is, you know, can you hone in on one of those? And in my business specifically, it's that kind of like dollar saved. So the revenue piece, and then the because it's good revenue coming in, not actually losing it on the way. And then the efficiency piece. But what I think is interesting is your point on like, who are you talking to and how are you positioning that? And I think especially as AI becomes more relevant, this is something that we have really thought about. How do you position at different levels within the organization? Yeah. Because you say, oh, I'm going to bring in AI and the team's going to be so much more efficient. Actually, the baseline work that you're doing, you won't need to do anymore. Like, you tell that to users, even the frontline manager, like,
you're creating panic.
Excited about that.
Right. And you're creating a potential barrier, right? Because if you're going to come from my job, then I'm not going to make it any easier for you to come in and make me obsolete.
Yes, exactly. So great storyline for the executive, right? You won't have to hire. You may even be able to reallocate some of your resources to higher level things.
Yeah.
But from a, you know, user, frontline manager, that story may not resonate, right? So maybe instead you're talking about how do we make your team more efficient so that you spend less time on the stuff that you don't like or the stuff that isn't as fun in your job. So being able to kind of evolve that storyline based on who you're talking, it may still be the same metric that you're going after, but I think that context is really important.
Yeah, it's really important too for us as people who work in any kind of revenue role, right? Whether you are on the front end of the sale or on the retention side of the house, you have to figure out how do you take, you know, if I'm holding an apple, how do I rotate the apple to say you care more about the flesh of the apple, you care more about the skin, you care more about the stem, right? All still an apple. But how do we position that conversation? Because individual contributors care about very different things than someone who has a C-suite, you know, title. And how can you change that conversation without being untrue to your product or who you serve or what you do, but to make sure that you're tailoring it? And I think you're right. As we have the advent of AI, that is easier and easier for us to do. But it comes with what you kind of said in the beginning is the knowledge and the experience and the understanding of how to have that conversation. So if you're bringing in new people to your team, how do you transfer that knowledge to make sure that they don't miss the mark the first time they try to have that more nuanced conversation?
For us, I mean, some of it is determining someone's level within the interview process. Right? Are we bringing the right people in who either have the skill set or have a propensity for the skill set that we need? And, you know, I think probably most CS interviews have some level of like role play included. And I feel like that's very telling. Yeah. I think sometimes people think it's, you know, I'll just go through the exercise, but.
Or they like dismiss it entirely because they hate role play. Like, how many times are people like, oh, I hate this. So I'm not going to hang out. I'm not going to do it. Are we going to give it a half-assed attempt, right?
And it comes through very clearly. Like, that's probably the easiest interview for me to make a decision on because you can start to tell, right? Given the prompt, have you adjusted the language that you're going to use? How do you think about positioning the metrics that we've talked about? So I think it starts by, you know, are you bringing in the people for the level that you want? And then once you have someone in, you know, how do you give them the coaching and experience to do that? So we focus on trying to create a culture around feedback. So, you know, as early as week one, we have a new CSM presenting in the team meeting and getting feedback. And it's scary. It's a little overwhelming, but it sets the bar early on that we care about feedback and developing and growing. And so being able to kind of use that, get feedback from the team, starts to give people kind of a direction. How do we do it here? Because, you know, in each company, things are a little bit different. Obviously, there are a lot of transferable skills and experiences that you can bring, but figuring out how to hone that in for the audience that, you know, your specific company is going to be working with is important.
I couldn't agree more with that because it's not just like, oh, I'm good at, you know, creating dashboards, right? I'm good at creating dashboards in this culture, in this environment with feedback, because some people do not take feedback very well. So I work in a very collaborative environment, right? Like I'm a big believer there's no ego in growth, right? But if you're someone who just isn't ready for that, or you haven't created the psychological safety as a leader for people to feel like that feedback isn't malicious, then, you know, that's just not going to work for you.
Mm-hmm.
So what are you guys working on right now? What is the thing that you are focused on and on the horizon? You as an individual or you as a team?
Yeah. So our team, so we just bought a customer success platform. So doing all that.
Exciting.
Stand it up. It is exciting and daunting all at the same time. I had gotten feedback early on in my career of don't buy a CSP until you actually have stuff built out, right? Like you need to know where your data is. You need to have playbooks. Yeah. And that has been so helpful.
It's not going to create your process for you. It's going to make your process better. But if you expect it to be like something you magically turn on and all of a sudden everybody knows how to do everything, that's never going to feel good for you.
Yes. So we are, you know, starting to plug more things into there, which is wonderful. And then my big focus for the quarter is around like technology automation and AI. So what are the processes that we're doing today that we can either up level and using technology, mm-hmm. Eliminate because AI can do it for us. I was at a conference a couple of weeks ago and saw a really good chart that it was like, there's this kind of quadrant where, it's important to get done, but it's maybe not urgent. And the customer doesn't actually care how it gets done. They just want it to be done.
Yeah.
Right. So think about something like scheduling the next meeting or, you know, taking notes, right? Like the customer doesn't care if AI did that or you did that. So can you just offload that? Can you make it easier? And I thought it was an interesting way to think. So kind of thinking through, yeah, what are the things that the team doesn't like to do? And can we remove some of that friction?
I love that. And I think that your point is well taken about you have to have the systems in place before you bring in anything else. Because the same with AI and automation. If you don't have that content or that process or that experience, your AI automation might automate the wrong thing or mm-hmm. do it in a way that isn't quite right for you. And I think a lot of people are missing that. They're just like slapping AI on it and hoping for the best. And it's never going to work.
Mm-hmm.
So I love that you guys are focused on doing it right and then process and then adding automation and the technology layers, but not everybody goes that path.
Yes, that's true.
So when you're thinking about all of the incredible people that you've had a chance to meet in your career or as you've kind of grown your thought leadership around customer success and customer experience, who out there is leading the charge? Who else should we be talking to?
So I was thinking about this and my cheeky answer is my son, who is almost 4, because yep. I feel like I am learning and practicing skills with him daily, right? The art of negotiation and when do you push versus when do you, give in a little bit. But I think my probably more realistic answer is Bob London. So
Bob's a good dude.
You know, and it's kind of funny based on what I said earlier. I'm like, don't ask so many questions. Because Bob is very focused on asking questions. But I think that there is a right place, right time. And one thing that I love about kind of what Bob shares is it's often focused on second level questions, right? Going back to kind of the interview example, if someone's going through a role play, they get to the end of the slide, any questions? That is not engaging, right? Like it,
right.
Can you ask me a very specific question that is going to make me respond? And I think Bob does a good job of highlighting those. And I also really like his idea of don't hide behind slides, right? It's good to have a visual for some things, absolutely. But I think oftentimes, especially in this virtual world, we get into a meeting, we pop the slide up, and you can hardly even see the other people in the meeting at that point. So being able to be confident in leading a conversation by having a conversation, right? Being curious, asking questions, and then, you know, leveraging, metrics and visuals as you need.
I think it's really important. Everything you just said, one, Bob is a very cool dude. I got to sit in on one of his speeches at a conference that I went to. Very, very smart guy. But the slides thing is really poignant for me, especially because I think there is such a thing as being overprepared, right? And if you come in with a script in your head, I used to work with a guy who he had a script and he was going to follow that script no matter what you said. Mm-hmm. And it didn't matter. Like if you were talking, you could just tell he's rehearsing his next line that he's going to say. And it was never effective because people see through that. And also people want to be heard and they know when you're not hearing them. Mm-hmm. And you're just speaking to hear yourself speak.
Yeah, I would agree. I think it is a skill to be able to actively listen, respond in real time, and be comfortable with a little bit of the uncomfortable. I think you should go into every meeting with an objective and an agenda, but you're only one participant in the meeting, right? Things can change, things can evolve, and you have to be able to pivot with that as you need.
Yeah, 100%. So Emily, if someone is really connecting with you, if they want to learn more, they want to hang out, where can they find you online?
Yes. So I am on LinkedIn, Emily Garza, MBA. You can also come visit my website, which is Value CS with Emily.
Awesome. Okay. Well, thank you so much for joining me on The Growth Signal. This was a great conversation.
Thanks for having me.